Theater September 13th.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Today, on the first part of the program, we'll hear a replay of Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And among the topics, we'll talk about the effort to revive the Equal Rights Amendment here in Florida. Also, the Florida House has stepped in and is trying to stop the Hillsborough transportation tax. So we're going to talk about those two topics and more in the next half hour. And as we listen back to the program, you can email the studio here with your thoughts and comments. The address is dj@wmnf.org. Here is Florida This Week.
This is a production of WEDU PBS, Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.
Coming up next, some members of Florida's legislature are trying to undo the local transit tax in Hillsborough County. If it gets on the ballot and passes next year, the assault weapons ban would cost the state $4 million. State auditors slam the Step Up for Students school voucher program. And there's a renewed effort here in Florida to pass the Equal Rights Amendment and make it part of the U.S. Constitution. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Susan McManus is a professor emeritus of government and international studies at USF in Tampa. James Chan is the chapter director of the New Leaders Council Tampa Bay and a Democrat. Sharon Calvert is a blogger with Eye on Tampa Bay and a Republican. And Marlene Sokol is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. So it's nice to see you all. Great to have you here. Well, the Tampa Bay Times reported this week that the Florida House of Representatives has joined the fight to overturn Hillsborough's transportation tax. The Republican-controlled House in Tallahassee has filed a brief in support of a lawsuit seeking to overturn the tax. The decision to overturn will be ultimately up to the Florida Supreme Court. Such briefs can be filed with the okay of the House Speaker and do not require a vote from the membership of the entire House. Hillsborough voters approved the charter amendment last November, with 57% of voters saying yes to a 1% sales tax increase to pay for transit, bike, pedestrian, and road projects. The tax is projected to raise more than $280 million a year. So, Sharon, is the State House right to do this, or are they taking away local control?
Well, absolutely not. And I mean, they filed a friend of the court and amicus curiae briefing, of which they can do. It happens all the time in appeal cases, because this is now at the Florida Supreme Court. The lower court kind of split the baby and severed a huge portion of the charter amendment, but left the tax. But it's the state that has the responsibility for setting the rules, the laws, the procedures for the county to be able to levy the tax in the first place. So they have a vested interest, or more than a vested interest, I would say, to make sure that those rules are followed, those procedures, the law is not violated. And so they are saying, you know, it didn't matter who put the referendum on the ballot, because it was the county, it was on a county ballot, but there's the rules and procedures. And of course, the circuit court judge had already ruled that a huge portion of it was illegal and unlawful.
But is there any indication that Hillsborough won't follow the rules and procedures that the state expects?
Well, the problem is that a couple of things. It wasn't just a tax. It was a tax and appropriations legislation, because it was not just levying, asking the voter to vote for a transportation tax. It was also asking the voter to vote for how to spend it. And actually, I believe one of the arguments that they bring up in the brief is that a ballot can only ask the one question. And then there's also the severability issue. And so those are the two arguments that the brief has filed with the with the Florida Supreme Court, and they have every right to because they have a vested interest.
James, what do you think about that? Should the state house get involved in what Hillsborough voters decide to pass?
I think it's interesting that this was not put up for a vote in the Florida House. You know, if you're representing the House of Representatives, right, a house of the people, it should be given to at least a vote of those who are representing Hillsborough County. So I'm actually interested in wondering how the representatives who represent this county feel on this issue and whether the House should be appealing this decision.
Okay. Susan, what about the issue of, do you think Sharon's right that the state has a vested interest in making sure this is carried out right? Or do you think that this is an attempt to take away local control from the Hillsborough County Commission and Hillsborough voters?
I'm not a lawyer, and I've read it 15 times, and I don't know. But that's the problem, because there's a difference between the legal argument and the political argument. The political argument is for people who voted for it, who are stuck in traffic and whatever, and they want resolution, and they want to take matters in their own hands and willing to take money out of their own pocket. On the other hand, there is a question. So politically, it looks like, again, that the state is trying to usurp the local government. On the other hand, as I understand it, the authority to impose a local tax comes from the state, and it's to the county. The county is who put it on the ballot. And then this oversight committee, which is not an elective body, the question is, and I don't think voters were given enough information in the amendment to figure out who is really spending it, who's making the appropriations. Is it the county, or is it all this oversight committee? So I think there's really a lot of balls in the air, but politics and legal sometimes really kind of butt heads with each other.
I think the judge in his decision pretty much took away a lot of the power of this independent body that was going to try to decide whether the money was being spent right? And now the power is back with the Hillsborough County Commission.
Yeah, which I think, again, you talk about overstepping. I kind of questioned Stacey White and the whole rationale of the county commissioners should have the authority as opposed to the voters. Mm-hmm. But again, as you said, if you take some of that ability away from the oversight committee, then who makes the decisions? And it becomes very confusing.
Well, statute 212.055 is very clear. I mean, it says it. You just read the statute. It's very clear that the appropriations authority, who can spend those tax proceeds, that particular tax is with the county commission.
Mm-hmm. And then if you don't like what they do, you just vote them out.
They can be held accountable. That's right.
Yeah. Sharon, I've heard this from people. They say, well, look, Tallahassee has been cutting taxes. It doesn't give much money to local governments. And yet, as Susan said, people in Hillsborough County are stuck in these horrific traffic jams day in and day out. And finally, they decide to do something about it because they're not getting any help from Tallahassee.
Well, first of all, there was never a public debate on this issue because this was all done by a political committee that didn't do public outreach. They didn't invite stakeholders in. They didn't even put out there how they came up with calculating their percentages. To this date, we don't know that. They just, you know, came up with a plan that said they're going to allocate $16 billion for 30 years in a particular way, the way that they decided. And I don't believe that a lot of the voters understood the five pages of the regulations and the allocations, because none of those were referenced in the ballot summary language, which is the only thing that every voter is guaranteed to be able to read. So what did voters vote for? We don't know. We all agree there's a transportation issue that we can agree on. But again, you have to do it in the right way. You cannot violate the law. And so this is a legal issue. The political, the rhetoric is one side, but this is a legal issue that needs to be resolved, I think, before the commission takes action doing anything else.
And James, would you agree that the Hillsborough voters really didn't know what they were voting for when they passed the tax?
Well, I think there was an article in this week's Tampa Bay Times that said, the judge said, you know, these voters knew what they were voting for. It was very apparent in what they were voting for. But I do agree in the sense that I don't know that, you know, we all voted on the details of how this would be rolled out, but to Sharon's point, I think we all agree that they were voting to fix the transportation problem.
Okay. Well, a group called Ban Assault Weapons Now is trying to get a proposed amendment on the ballot next year that would ban assault weapons. This week, a panel of state economists reviewed the ballot language and estimated that it would cost state government $4 million a year to implement. The ballot proposal would prohibit possession of assault weapons, but would provide an exception for people who own the guns at the time the measure takes effect. Those people would be able to keep their military-style weapons if they register the guns with the state. Before people could register the weapons, though, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement would have to build a registration system. If the ballot measure is approved, the state registry would have to be up and running within 30 days of passage. But an FDLE staffer told The Economist that millions of guns potentially would be subject to registration, and it could take a year and a half before the system would be operational. And James, we found out late in the week, too, that The Economists are adding in another possible cost to the state if this even gets passed next year by voters, and that is that there would be lost revenue, sales tax revenue on guns and ammunition, and that would be a pretty hefty amount of money, too. So what do you make of, you know, we don't even know if it's going to get enough signatures to be on the ballot next year, but there's already a lot of talk about this amendment.
So I think that, you know, I think the original estimates were $4 million. Now they're up to somewhere like $25 or even $30 million. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that's actually a large number. Our state budget is $91 billion, right? So when we think about $4 million or $30 million, that's maybe 0.5% or 1% at the very most. But there's been estimates that, for example, the Pulse tragedy cost $385 million in terms of police force, medical care, and the dollar value on those lives costs, right? So when we're thinking about that, I mean, how much are we willing to put on these lives? And not just Pulse, but Marjory Stoneman Douglas. And also, you know, if we don't ban these assault weapons, I don't understand the need for them personally, but, you know, there are tourists who might not come to Florida because we have all these shootings. And what is that potential loss revenue? So that's a question I really want to have answered.
Sure. You think it's going to make the ballot?
Well, I think there is an issue there. They only have about 5 months. They have to have about 760,000 valid signatures by February 1st next year. I'm not sure what the tally is right now. In August, it was about 100,000. So they do have a hurdle for getting the valid signatures just to get it on the ballot. But there's also an issue that in July, Attorney General Moody filed a motion with the Supreme Court regarding the ballot language.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to see it on the ballot next year. Yeah.
Well, if you read the ballot language, it is a bit confusing. And the other thing is, and we talked about it in the first segment, this is a citizen initiated, and sometimes what happens is it leaves gaping holes of legislation that has to come in and fix things or lawsuits.
Well, Marlene, we've seen this over and over again where the legislature doesn't take action, so citizens try to take action on their own because they feel like Tallahassee's not listening to them. There really hasn't been much gun control legislation passed in Tallahassee, even after Pulse and even after Parkland. A lot of people wanted it, especially after the Parkland shooting. There was massive protests around the state. But, you know, is this, if the legislature doesn't do something, citizens take things into their own hands.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you almost can't look at the cost. It's almost obscene to look at, especially the cost of lost revenue, that people aren't buying as many guns. You just can't do that. As you know, my colleague here was saying, I mean, there are other costs, even in the schools alone, tens of millions of dollars that are being spent right now on security measures, to train school employees to be armed guards at the schools, which is now mandatory. So you can't look at the costs, but even if you do look at the costs, there are a lot of, you know, other costs. And yeah, you're right about the legislature. I mean, after Parkland, they took action, but it was not the kind of action that would limit citizens' access to assault weapons. It was, you know, mental health funding, and it was, you know, let's arm some of our school employees. So no, I don't think you can count on the legislature. You have to consider the influence of the NRA. That's always there. And so, yeah, citizens are taking matters into their own hands.
Susan, this piece of proposed ballot language, though, is one of those that doesn't have a big wealthy backer behind it. A lot of the issues that are going to be on the ballot next year, or at least look like they're heading to be on the ballot, have either utility companies or John Morgan or some other wealthy group or individual behind them. This one doesn't seem to have that. So to the question I asked Sharon, let me ask you, do you think that they have a chance of getting this proposed ban on the ballot, getting enough signatures to get it on the ballot?
Yes, I do, because college campuses are back in swing, and that is a prime territory for collecting signatures for ballot issues, and that's a big issue with college students. So I think that they will get the required signatures. But the catch right now is, will the Supreme Court sign off on the language? Because there's two requirements. And Florida is unique. We're the only state that has this authority for our Supreme Court, where they can take a proposed amendment off the ballot. It has to be a single subject, and it has to be clear enough for the average person to understand. Those are the two criteria. And if you look at this one, there's already people pointing to the loopholes. Again, politics colliding with legal language, because every poll that I've looked at for the last year has shown a hefty percentage of people in favor of banning assault weapons. That's just a constant. But what is also typical, and Marlene spoke to this, the legislature always has to fill in with statutory language. So if you expect one of the amendments that goes on the ballot to have every inch of everything covered, it would be so long that it would fail the ability of the average person to understand. It would collide. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those huge dilemmas. Do I make it simple enough for people to understand a general concept? If you know, which is sort of what we have now, that requires the legislature to fill in statutory language. That's the problem we've run into with Amendment 4 on the felon restoration of felon rights, was what do you mean by this? We have to have clarity, because the supervisor of elections have to understand how to track this down. Always a dilemma.
Okay. Well, the News Service of Florida reports that state auditors have found problems with Florida's largest K-12 private school scholarship funding organization. The audit found that the group Step Up for Students failed to properly check applicants' household income eligibility for the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program, which provides voucher-like scholarships for low-income students to attend private schools. The auditors found that there's a risk that scholarships will be awarded to recipients who are ineligible. The audit also found that special needs students who were eligible for awards under the Gardner Scholarship Program saw a delay in funding due to an error by Step Up. The error affected 538 special needs students before it was fixed. The scholarship programs have long been controversial, as Republican leaders have sought to expand school choice here in Florida. The teachers' union and many Democratic lawmakers have argued that the programs strip money away from public schools. All right, so Marlene, how serious are the revelations that the auditors found?
I don't think they're terribly serious, and I spoke with Step Up for Students, and I read the audit cover to cover. I kind of feel like the audit has been weaponized by people who don't like these types of voucher and scholarship programs, and I think the context that you have to look at this in is the state, year by year, is the legislature and the Department of Education under Secretary Corcoran. They've taken numerous steps to both privatize education and to make various scholarships available so that parents can take that backpack full of cash and send their child to a private school, oftentimes a Christian school, for whatever reason. So straight out, vouchers are back. The legislature approved them. This very similar to the program that years ago was declared unconstitutional. It's back. It's going to grow. The end is, you know, limitless. So I think that's why people seized upon this audit. When you read the actual audit, for example, the two most serious things they found: not using the right method to determine eligibility.
Income eligibility. Yeah.
They used a formula that the USDA had outlined for free lunch eligibility. And so the system changed, but the instructions came so late that they had already processed the applications. The more serious sounding one about those 500 Gardner Scholarship recipients who got their money late, there was a clerical error. They did get their money. They got it later than the rest of the students, but about the same time as they would have last year. So I don't want to call this nitpicking, because this is a good audit. You need audits. They did what they needed to do. I don't think the audit itself is as serious as what other people, teachers' unions and so forth, are looking at as really a dismantling of public schools. And that's why people got so excited about this audit.
Okay. Well, there's a renewed effort in Florida to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. Backers say the ERA needs just one more state to ratify the amendment in order to be added to the U.S. Constitution. On Thursday, the mayors of Tampa and St. Petersburg endorsed the ERA and urged the legislature to pass the amendment. The operative words of the amendment say, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex." The amendment was originally passed by Congress and sent to the states in 1972. A total of 38 states are needed to ratify a constitutional amendment. Florida's House has voted to ratify four times in 1972, 1975, 1979, and 1982. But the Florida Senate has never approved. So, Susan, is it that simple? Does everybody agree that just one more state needs to ratify it and then it becomes part of the U.S. Constitution? Or isn't there a big controversy about whether that's enough to get it in the Constitution?
A big controversy because of the fact that Congress had twice extended the limit. And the last period that you could have passed it was 1982. The big question is, does Congress have the power, or will they vote to extend ratification, at which point will some other states come in? There's a lot of talk that Virginia is poised to do it almost immediately. There's been a push in Florida, I think, for the last, I don't know how many sessions, the bill has been introduced but not gotten anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Sharon, what do you think? Would it be a good idea to pass the ERA?
Well, I will just say this. I think there's a huge issue with, from the legal perspective, back to the legal side of this issue, because the Supreme Court ruled in 1982 that it had been resolved. I mean, they put the deadline in. The Supreme Court ruled previously at another time, 1939, that it would be Congress to put the deadline in on amendments, and they did that. Mm-hmm. And there's also the question of four states that had rescinded it during this time period, and so is that valid or not? So I think, again, it goes kind of back to these legal issues that are surrounding it all.
And what about Susan's point, though? Could the current Congress extend the deadline for another 3 or 4 years?
I think they can. It's up to them. There's a lot of pressure right now because, let's face it, women's voting power is on the upswing. And the Senate, it would easily pass the House. We know that. But would it pass the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate? There's a lot of U.S. senators, Republicans, that are in tight races or in swing states. And there's a lot of pressure on Republicans to do better with women voters in 2020. So it is a political thing, but it's fascinating. And all of this was really sort of escalated by the fact that next year is a 200th anniversary of women's suffrage.
And Rob, I also want to add that the 27th Amendment wasn't passed until more than 200 years than when it was first introduced, right? So back to the whole legal controversy, I don't know that it's actually been figured out because there's been constitutional lawyers who are still arguing over whether this could actually be extended.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? James, let's start with you. Your other big story.
Right. So I think that, you know, Tampa Mayor Jane Castor announced this week that all city employees will start making $15 minimum wage, and I think that's a huge story that we all need to be paying attention to because that's a trend that's happening across the country now.
All right, Marlene, your other big story?
Well, I've been following the search for a new superintendent for the Hillsborough Schools, which doesn't sound real exciting, but it has huge implications for the community. We need somebody. The other one was very good, but time for some more changes.
There are so many students. Is it the eighth largest
in the country, if you don't count Puerto Rico, 217,000 students, and a lot of challenges.
A big responsibility, too. Sharon, your other big story.
Well, I've been following, this is in Pinellas County, a Central Avenue BRT project that the PSTA Transit Agency has proposed, and they are trying to make amends with two of the three municipalities who have formerly opposed this $45 million project that removes a lane of traffic from downtown St. Pete to St. Pete Beach. So they're trying to make amends because South Pasadena does not want their lane removed.
Okay. And you think it's blocked, Sharon? Do you think that the BRT is going to be blocked?
I don't know. The grant is still up with the feds. Okay. It's a wait and see.
All right. And Susan, you're on the big story.
the bipartisan support for the governor's handling of the hurricane. And that comes even from fairly liberal-leaning newspapers to the conservative all around. But a second part of that story is that Bay County has had to extend the time of temporary living for people who have been displaced by Hurricane Michael. So there's an uproar going to start happening of that. We're taking care of other people around the country. That should happen. But now politically, what are we doing for the panhandle?
All right. Well, thanks for watching Florida This Week. And panelists, thank you all for coming by the show. Luckily, Florida was spared any major damage from Hurricane Dorian. But large parts of the Bahamas were flattened, and the total number of those killed is still unknown. Many people here in the Bay Area sprang into action to provide hurricane relief supplies. Please donate to a relief charity this weekend to help the people in the Bahamas recover. And you can look up charities at charitynavigator.org to find the best ones. Well, thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org and continue the conversation on Facebook. You can watch this.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU TV. And my guests on that panel, Dr. Susan McManus, James Chan was the Democrat, Sharon Calvert was the Republican, and Marlene Sokol was the journalist on that panel. We talked about the House effort to undo Hillsborough's transportation tax. We talked about the cost of the assault weapons ban if it's approved by Florida voters next year, and that question of whether it's approved is way up in the air. Also, the school voucher audit, and also the effort to revive the Equal Rights Amendment and get the Florida legislature to pass the Equal Rights Amendment and potentially add it to the U.S. Constitution. Well, if you want to comment about any of these topics, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Email address here in the studios, dj@wmnf.org. I mentioned the Bahamas at the end of that show. We still don't know what the death toll is, and it's probably going to be months until we actually get a number. Right now, 45 people have been reported to be found dead. 70,000 are homeless in the Bahamas. A CNN report says that it looks like a war zone in the Bahamas. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. David writes this: I found it ironic and kind of funny how Tampa area dignitaries were bragging last week about how much Tampa's changed since we hosted a Super Bowl in 2009. But things really haven't changed, writes David. He says, we still don't have a decent transit system. While Orlando and Miami have expanded their train systems, I find it ridiculous that Stacy White, the county commissioner in Hillsborough, has this campaign to undo the transit tax. David says, power to the people, dang it. And David says that your panelist, Sharon Calvert, her group No Tax for Tracks campaign, that's old news. She needs to sit down. And David goes on to say, why doesn't she move to North Dakota or another place with wide open spaces? Tampa people need a decent mass transit system, writes David. All right, so there you go. There's David's email. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And let's take a call. Looks like Frank is busy, so I'll take the calls and screen them. Caller, you're on the air, and what's your name and where are you calling from?
This is David in Pasco.
Hi, David. What would you like to talk about?
Well, tell me about the Bahamas. Is that a sovereign nation? I know that Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, and we were pretty much obliged to kind of like help them out. It almost seems like the Bahamas is catching more attention than Puerto Rico. Do you see that or I'm incorrect?
Well, the Bahamas are getting attention now because they were just hit last week. Puerto Rico was hit 2 years ago. And they got a lot of attention. I know that not just on the networks, but on this radio station, Puerto Rico has gotten a lot of attention over the past 2 years as it struggles, or the past year as it struggles to recover. Did I say 2 years?
It was last year. The president has actually called down Puerto Rico as being like a third world nation, or like a poor nation, but it's kind of like a territory of the United States, if I'm not mistaken. And now, Puerto Ricans, I know, or Bahamians, I know, in fact, I heard a lady called in Bohemian the other day. I was appalled. But the Bahamians, I know there's a lot of very, very, very wealthy people there. What are they? What state of mind are they in? I mean, what ability do they have to recover from this as opposed to Puerto Rico?
Yeah, David, I'm not sure where you're going with this, and I'm sorry, missing the nuance.
Does the Bahamas have the ability to recover it on its own without U.S. and world aid? Where I feel that Puerto Rico does not have the ability to cover without U.S. or world aid.
Neither has the ability to recover on their own, David. They both need help from the outside. They don't, Puerto Rico was... up till recently had 30,000 tarps still on some of the homes around Puerto Rico. The Bahamas today, at least portions of it, look like a war zone. Both need help from around the world.
And what can we do to help them?
Well, I think, as I suggested on the show, pick a charity. There's the Red Cross. There's a bunch of charities out there that deliver aid during emergencies. And I would go to Charity Navigator. I'd pick the best one, get the one that has the best rating, and go with it. In the Tampa Bay Times last week, for 2 days, they listed all the local charities that were collecting. There are fundraisers going on around the Bay Area. There's a lot of ways to help out. You could just do a Google search for Bahamas Relief. And
thank you, Rob, and thank you for your show.
Okay, thanks, David. I'm sorry I missed the nuance. But both Puerto Rico and the Bahamas need help. Just the question about whether or not the Bahamas are an independent country, the Bahamas, known officially as the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, is a country within the Lucayan Archipelago in the Caribbean. I'm just reading from Wikipedia. So it is a country. I think it got its independence from Britain years ago, but I don't know exactly when. Here it is. It says the Bahamas became an independent Commonwealth realm in 1973 with Elizabeth II as its queen. So it's part of, I guess, the former British Empire, but it became independent in 1973. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Carlos in Tampa. Hey, Carlos, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, sir. Just regarding the transit system, absolutely it's needed here in Florida. I don't know what the issue is. If you look at now, Rob, and I'm sure you drive around, anywhere you go, traffic jam. They are trying to fix the highways. If you look at the cost of accident, crashes, emission problems, absolutely, it is worth it. You know what I mean? I'm sick and I'm tired to hear.
So what do you think about your house, the house in Tallahassee, and it could very well be just the Speaker of the House, but what do you think about the House saying to Hillsborough County, no, you can't have a transit tax to improve transportation needs in Hillsborough County?
Well, they are in bed with the oil companies and the lobbyists that they are, supporting their campaign. You know what I mean? And that's the bottom line. We always hear, every single country, Europeans are like, oh, we're not Europe. We're not these. Well, when it comes to healthcare, same excuses, same thing over and over. Absolutely, it's needed, Rob. If you go now, I live in the Riverview area. It used to take me, it's like 2 minutes to get to the highway. Now, a rush hour, it takes me, it's like 30 to 45 minutes. It's, the area is growing. Driving is not going to do it anymore, no matter how many lines they are going to end. If you look at the number of crashes and accidents, it's like every minute there is a crash and loss of life. And as I said, emission and the price of, oil, gasoline, you name it, you add all the numbers. And transit is the solution.
All right, Carlos, thanks a lot. I know how terrible traffic is in Riverview. We used to be able to drive from Hyde Park out to our transmitter site just south of Riverview in a half an hour. Now, if we drove from where we are in East Tampa out to the transmitter site, it would take 45 minutes to an hour. Traffic is terrible. I agree. It's just you guys are really taking the brunt of it, too, out there in East Hillsborough County.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Carlos. Well, what do you think about should the House try to stop the transit tax? Now, we don't know how much. I guess we have a general idea, but we don't know how much of that transit tax money would actually go to a train. The Hillsborough County Commission hasn't really moved forward with any sort of plans for a rail system or anything like that. So maybe none of it would go to a rail system. I think the option is there. There is a category called transit. But there's no guarantee that in the future we'll get a train in Hillsborough County. Now, we do need road repairs. I mean, it's interesting to me as I drive on Hillsborough Avenue in East Tampa, and this is a major road used by a lot of people, including a lot of trucks. And Hillsborough Avenue is in desperate need of repaving. And it's been in desperate need of repaving for a long time, especially the east side of Hillsborough Avenue, east of Nebraska, east of the interstate. And whoever's in charge of that, I suspect it's the state, hasn't really done anything to pave that road. And you drive on that road, and if you've got a loose bumper, it's going to get worse as you drive on that road. Anyway, so I wonder what you think about the House, someone in the House of Representatives, maybe some members or maybe just one member, this House Speaker, is saying, no, you can't have an increase in your transportation tax. You can't have a transportation tax in Hillsborough County. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Rich in Tampa. Rich, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hi, good morning. I was listening to your program about solar energy earlier, and I've been a Democrat my whole life, but I always vote for the person who seems like the best candidate. And I'm the guy that they want to convince to go one way or the other, because I'm always in the middle and get shot from both sides. Having said that, this morning I was a guy that had solar energy in the 80s. When they talked about doing all this stuff, I think it's great. But when somebody gets on there and says they're going to bring people in from out of town and local people to stop traffic, to make a point, I say that's criminal. Because you have people in ambulances, you have people, you know, have obligations, and I really think MNF needs to have somebody stand up when somebody says that on their radio station and say, hey, wait a minute, we're not going to be part of criminal activity. Regardless of what the goal is, criminal activity is never an excuse. So that's my comment. I think you guys should take it seriously, because you guys are using public airwaves.
Well, Rich, let me just ask you, you say you're a Democrat. It doesn't matter that you're a Democrat, but, you know, a lot of people supported Dr. King in the sit-downs at the Woolworths and all that. What the folks from Extinction Rebellion were talking about was to walk through downtown St. Petersburg and hold a climate strike. They talked about a crowd of 500 people. So I don't know how much traffic you can stop with a crowd of 500 people, but you know, I'm sure the police will have a route for the walk and all that. I'm not sure how big of a problem it's going to be for ambulances if 500 people hold a march in St. Petersburg. So you may be going off a little bit prematurely, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think one life is worth saving.
Well, I can't imagine that a group of environmentalists would stop an ambulance. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, not intentionally, but you look around the country where people have amassed in the streets and you see what happened. And I don't want it to happen in Tampa. Maybe it's going to happen in St. Pete, because they're not going to enforce the rules as well as they will over here. But I'm pretty sure the Hillsborough County Sheriff and Jane Castor is not going to let her streets be taken over by people who are going to stop public, be able to use their public transportation lanes for a cause. So that's my comment. And I don't think I'm overreacting. I think the law is...
Yeah, but how much of a shutdown? I mean, we'll probably have to do another show on this, because I'm not sure what their actual intentions were. And I was listening to that interview. I was here during the interview.
Right.
But I'm not sure, you know, whether their intention is to shut down all lanes of traffic. I think that would be not an accurate representation of what they're calling for. And if you have 500 people, How many lanes of traffic can you shut down? You can't shut down very many.
I've seen ducks cross the road and stop traffic.
Well, and we don't want to run over ducks, right?
Right.
I just can't imagine. I mean, if these environmentalists are motivated by concern for human beings, they're not going to stop an ambulance. And that's why I think you might be overreacting to this.
Okay. Yeah. I appreciate having my voice heard.
Thanks. Okay, Rich, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. And let's go to Matt, who's in West Hillsborough County. Hey, Matt, you're on MNF. What would you like to say? Hi, Matt.
Hey,
you're
on
WMNF.
Are you able to hear me okay?
I think so. There seems to be a delay.
Just give me 10 seconds here, and I can probably see if I can be okay. Are you able to hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I can't believe I'm in this position, but I was listening to the end of the program that you had on the Florida This Week, and heard Susan McManus mention that next year would be an anniversary, 200.
She missed suffrage. That. She meant 100, but yeah, she misspoke.
Oh, yeah. I hope she isn't listening today.
I'm sure she'll figure out a way to correct herself. She meant 100. I know what she meant.
Right. I had to look at that, too. And it took me a while to I can remember when I first saw the image of Hillary Clinton when she took the stage at the DNC in her white suit. I don't know. I didn't make the connection then, but that was her way of commemorating women's suffrage.
Right.
That's why
right.
she was all white. And it makes me think that it almost has to happen next year to correct this horrible mistake that we've made as a country.
You mean by not giving equal rights to everybody based on their sex or their gender?
Well, that too. That's something also I care deeply about a great deal, but that's not the issue I was talking about, even though I do care about it a great deal. But I think when it comes to next year's election, I'm going to call it now. It's going to come down between three candidates, the final three candidates from on the Democratic side. And I think two of them will be women, fortunately.
Yeah, who do you think it's going to be?
I think Bernie Sanders will make it. And then the other two, Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris. I think Bernie's best chance was last time. Yes, he looks good now. And I voted for him last time, and I would vote for him again. But I think it's going to come down to one of the other two. And
you think that's how you make it up for the last 100 years or so?
I would say things are building that way.
Yeah.
And that's the best possible outcome that I could see happening.
All right. Okay. Well, Matt, thanks a lot. Thanks for the call.
It's good to reconnect again, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Good to hear from you. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Bubba writes this: I was in Atlanta this past weekend for the USF Georgia Tech football game, and my group used MARTA to get around. It's aggravating that we, here in Hillsborough County, still have a crappy mass transit system. We're way overdue for a MARTA-style train system. Yeah, you know, I've not taken MARTA in Atlanta. I have been on those roads in Atlanta, though, that have, it seems like 18 lanes. It's very daunting to drive on those roads in Atlanta. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Bob in Tarpon Springs. Bob, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. First off, I wanted to somewhat reply to the gentleman that wasn't sure if people should assemble and protest. A lot of people in the country want the Second Amendment to be completely unfettered, but you know, they don't mind all kinds of rules and regulations against First Amendment, you know, free speech, right to assemble. Those all go out the window. They're rights just like everything else.
That is one of the basic rights.
Of course.
Yeah.
Other than that, just in my memory, which is waning these days, this will be the third time that our Republican legislators or governors have shot down mass transit. Jeb Bush did in the 90s when the people of Florida voted for looking into high-speed rail. He said we didn't know what we were voting for. This time they're saying the same thing. And then when Scott refused the money from the Obama administration, what do Republicans have against transportation
or local government for that matter? Because and those are really good examples. So there's other examples too where Tallahassee has reached in to local government and said you can't do that. So if a local government says, hey, the minimum wage is too low in our city, we want to raise it, Tallahassee is saying no. If you want to have a tree ordinance in your city and protect some old growth trees in your city, Tallahassee came in this time around and said no. And there's a host of times where Tallahassee has taken away local control. If you know, I always remember Republicans used to say it's local government that knows best because they're closest to the people. But what this new brand of Republicans in Florida is doing is they're saying Tallahassee knows best. Well, Tallahassee is where all the lobbyists are. And for whatever reason, the lobbyists are whispering in the ears of the Tallahassee politicians, and they're telling them what to do. And so whether it's transit or anything else, the lobbyists control at Tallahassee, and Tallahassee is trying to say to us, we know best. And I don't think they know best.
Of course not, especially when it comes to, the people voting for something. I mean, we're supposed to be a
democracy,
representative democracy. The right. Representatives aren't pulling their weight, so the people have to step in, and every time that's happened, they just override it.
Exactly. That's why we voted for the felons' voting rights amendment. That's why we voted for medical marijuana, because Tallahassee wasn't doing the job,
and they're doing their best to chip away at both of those.
Yeah, they must not like democracy.
That's. Seems to be it. Well, they're insider democracy, let's say.
Yeah. All right, Bob, thanks. That's a great point. And let's go to Carolyn in Plant City, who will break the gender barrier at 1:52. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling in.
A couple things. The gentleman that was just on, I liked a lot of what he said. Are you getting a reverberation for me?
No, you sound good at this end.
Okay, good. When he said that you should never break the law, we have, as a country, broken lots of civil disobedience laws in order to get progress. So I would disagree with that. I think sometimes you have to get arrested, perhaps, to get the point across. Make change. So there's that. And as far as the transportation tax, like everything else that you mentioned, and I was thinking about a lot of them, I am really PO'd about Tallahassee and the fact that they have been bought and sold. They've been in office way too long as a party. This is what happens when one party controls the House this long. They're cozy with lobbyists, and they're basically making decisions that benefit their philosophies. And like you said, at this point, I don't even understand, because I thought Republicans as well were always a states' rights type of party, and local, government should have control. And this is a totally different animal now, and kind of like the White House. It's a dictatorial thing, and there is no democracy in Florida. I don't know why people keep voting for the same people, and yet a majority of people will vote for amendments to change things that Tallahassee won't do, and yet they keep voting the same people in that are going to take this away from us. So it's just crazy to me. I'm so frustrated. I've lived in Florida all my life. I keep up with things locally and federally and national and internationally, and nothing makes me more angry than what's going on in our own state with these Republican Congress people. And
Well, it gives a whole new meaning to states' rights. I mean, if they're exerting states' rights, they're saying that Tallahassee has rights that the city of Tampa or the county of Hillsborough do not have. I mean, it gives a whole different meaning to local control.
Yeah.
I do wonder, and I think part of it is that Tallahassee is so far away from most of us. You know, it's an 8 or 9 hour drive, I think, from Miami, 4.5 hour drive from Tampa. All sorts of strange and weird things go on in Tallahassee while those folks are up there in this relatively small town that has much more in common with Georgia and Alabama than it does with Orlando and Fort Myers and Tampa. And all sorts of weird things go on there, and because the press is the ranks of the press are being decimated, we're not getting the true word of what's really going on. We don't get enough coverage of what's going on in Tallahassee as we should, and we don't really have an idea of the power of lobbyists. That's really not being talked about enough in the coverage that we do get.
Well, I know Daniel Ruth covers it well, as he did in his last article, but also I used to live in Panama City. I understand what you're saying. It is more like Georgia, Alabama in many ways. And that's another thing, too. You know, I know Panama City, Bay County is a Republican county for the most part. And yet, you know, they're feeling the ire of not getting support that they deserve. Kendall Air Force Base is not going to be able to have funding for certain things that they were promised by Trump, because he's moving money, you know, for, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's going to send it to the border wall and border security. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Great to hear from you. And Kevin writes this. Is there any information on the administrative costs for charities? If the Red Cross pays its president hundreds of thousands of dollars, I would rather not support this. The ones with the lowest administrative costs are hard to find. Actually, Charity Navigator is one place to start looking, and they will talk about the administrative costs and how much money actually is delivered to the people through the services of the Red Cross. So, yeah, you could look at Charity Navigator. That's one really great place to start, Kevin. And there are other places, too. Carolyn, thanks for your phone call. Let's go to Lucan in St. Petersburg. Lucan, you're on M&F. Hi, Lucan. Hey, you're on M&F.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to figure out the subject of the show, but I heard somebody talking about public transit and the lack of funding based on Tallahassee's
You missed the early part of the show.
Yeah, so I'll chime in on that, and then I'll get back on subject of what it sounds like we're talking about now. HART, as well as PSTA, are both private organizations that I really believe would be the reason why Tallahassee wouldn't wish to fund something like that. We had our own, like, Project Greenlight here in Pinellas County for PSTA that people shot down because they didn't want to spend, like, an extra penny on every dollar just in order to help out the folks that are poor that don't spend quite as much money in taxes to be able to catch the bus. And I took public transit myself for some years before I realized that it was probably going to be the end of my life trying to ride a bike and take public transit between St. Petersburg and Tampa on a daily basis. I believe that the mismanagement of these private organizations has been the reason why Tallahassee has said no on the funding.
And Lucan, you're not right. These are public organizations. PSTA and HART are public.
Maybe that has changed.
No, it's not changed. They've always been public.
Maybe you're right, and maybe the bus drivers don't know the company that they work for. Maybe you are correct. Maybe I'm under the wrong impression.
Yeah, Lucan, they're not a private company. They're the members of the HART board and the members of the PSTA board are appointed by local elected officials, and they use public money. So, I don't know where you got that from. Amin writes this, too many people moving to Tampa, second even with the train residences, are spread and spaced out, so you get out of the train and then you got to walk another 10 or 15 minutes under 100 degree or heavy showers. So that's Amin's email. Amin, I hope I read that right. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Coming up in the next hour, a really important program, a discussion about mental health care here in the Tampa Bay area. So stick around for that. Sean Cadena will be here. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for Frank Knox for being our